So this is a hard morning for all of you, right? The worst morning of the year, painful morning, waking up an hour early. So it's fitting that this morning we're talking about pain. That's the subject of our sermon on the most painful morning of the year. We're trying to think this morning about how we respond to pain. Our world is full of pain. Our lives involve pain. I don't know what pain is in this room right now, but I know that all of us have some measure of pain, and some of us have real significant pain that we're in the midst of. Deep pain, hurtful pain. What do we do with that? How do we handle pain? Well, to start thinking about that, we're going to think about one of our most famous philosophers and see what he has to say about pain. This particular philosopher is known for being fairly short. He's got pointy green ears. He uses awkward grammar. You know him as Yoda, right? Somebody in the first service pointed out that I think Yoda is responsible for probably most of the theology that people believe. It's a fair observation. We're going to look at a scene from Star Wars Episode 3, which I'm told if you're a real Star Wars fan, you don't acknowledge the existence of, but that's okay. In this particular scene we're going to watch, Anakin Skywalker has just received visions, what he calls premonitions, of his wife dying in childbirth. And he's trying to figure out how he handles that pain, so he goes to Yoda to figure it out. And this is what Yoda does. Let's watch this clip.
Premonitions? Premonitions? These visions you have.
They're of pain, suffering, death.
Yourself you speak of, or someone you know?
Someone.
Close to you?
Yes.
Careful you must be when sensing the future, Anakin. The fear of loss is a path to the dark side.
I won't let these visions come true, Master Yoda.
Death is a natural part of life. Rejoice for those around you who transform into the Force. Mourn them, do not. Miss them, do not. Attachment leads to jealousy. The shadow of greed, that is.
What must I do, Master Yoda?
Train yourself to let go of everything you fear to lose.
Yeah, right? This is Yoda's response to pain. He says, train yourself to let go of everything you fear to lose. His advice is essentially, don't let it bother you. His advice is to rise above pain, to detach yourself from the things of life that might bother you so that you can go through hard stuff and just coast along without experiencing the difficulties that others experience. He would say you would ascend above your pain. Anakin's perspective is different. Anakin says, I won't let these things happen. His perspective is to avoid pain at all costs, to try and stop it. Never will I go through this kind of pain. We find out later that that insistence of his eventually leads to him becoming a part of the dark side. But you have these two options. Avoid pain. That's, by the way, a typically Western response. Fight against it. Don't let things happen, or ascend above pain. That's more of an Eastern, almost Buddhist response. I can live above the things of this earth. The question comes to us, how do we handle pain? And the question is, do we have another option? What we're going to see this morning is a third way that Jesus presents to us. We're looking this morning, continuing our series called Seven Last Words, looking at the seven statements that Jesus made as he was dying from the cross. Our goal during this series has been to dive more deeply into the experience of Jesus on the cross and hope that God would do something within us as we understand more of what Jesus went through. The statement this morning is probably the most difficult statement. It's a statement of pain, of loneliness. It's a statement most of us are familiar with, but we're terrified of it. It's the question that we've asked before and everyone in our world has asked, God, where are you? How could you let this happen to me? As we look at this statement, we're going to try and understand more of what Jesus was going through. We're going to try and understand the actual experience of being crucified. And we're going to look at how Jesus enters into that, how he faces it, how he suffers the pain of crucifixion. But we're also going to observe that there's something else in the mix, that Jesus has something that gives him hope even as he suffers. And that's what we're going to try and learn from Jesus this morning. How do you face pain in a way where you're able to suffer, but with hope? So we'll start by reading the passage for this morning. This is the only statement of the seven that is included in two different Gospels. Both Matthew and Mark record this statement, and both Matthew and Mark record it as the only statement that Jesus made from the cross. We're going to look at Matthew's version, although they're essentially identical. Starts in Matthew chapter 27, and it starts with verse 45. I'll read through verse 49. Matthew 27, verse 45. From the sixth hour until the ninth hour, darkness came over all the land. About the ninth hour, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of those standing there heard this, they said, "He's calling for Elijah." Immediately, one of them ran and got a sponge. He filled it with wine vinegar, put it on a stick, and offered it to Jesus to drink. The rest said, "Now, leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him." This is probably the darkest, most difficult scene during the crucifixion. The land is dark. Jesus cries aloud in pain. Even on the cross, he's misunderstood. The people around him confuse the Aramaic for "my God, Eloi," with the name for Elijah, and they assume that he's calling for Elijah. So they give him a drink, hoping that would sustain him long enough to see if Elijah might come and save him. And they wait, and of course, no rescue comes. Jesus is left on the cross. To start off, we want to try and get a better sense of the physical experience of what Jesus went through on the cross. There are several studies done by physicians and various medical personnel on what really happened. The most common one is a book by the man named Pierre Barbet called A Doctor at Calvary. He was published in about 1950, and Dr. Barbet has the suggestion that what happens on the cross is you actually suffocate to death. He says that the weight of the body constricts your airflow so that you have to scooch yourself up on the cross in order to breathe, and eventually you get so exhausted that you don't have the energy to do that, and you eventually can't breathe and suffocate and die. Well, there's actually some other evidence. This theory, Dr. Barbet's theory, is very popular. It's been repeated a lot in Bible studies and commentaries and various things. But there's been some more recent evidence that maybe that's not exactly what happened. A man by the name of Frederick Zugibi, who was a forensic pathologist, published a book called The Crucifixion of Jesus. And if you're interested in this, I would recommend this book to you. You can find the reference on the printed sermon when it gets printed in a couple days. But what Zugibi says is a little bit of a different picture. Now, the point of this is not to say this guy's right, this guy's wrong. We can't exactly know what happened to Jesus on the cross. The text doesn't give us those details. It happened a long time ago. But the point of looking at this is that I think having something concrete, having some real experience, gives us a better picture of what it might have been like. It helps us to imagine it, to make what might seem abstract concrete. So we're going to look primarily at Dr. Zugibe's research to see what this might have entailed. Jesus' physical pain actually began hours before the cross at Gethsemane. The gospel author Luke records this in Luke 22, 44. Being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. Jesus had gone to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray. He was in extreme mental anguish. He didn't want to die. He was scared. He was anxious. And this is what Luke records. Well, Dr. Zugibe actually describes an extremely rare medical condition called hematidrosis, which is the actual occurrence of droplets of blood being sent out in your sweat. It's rare. It's only been recorded several times in the past century, but it is a documented medical condition, and it seems to occur when the patient is suffering extreme stress, extreme anxiety. Several of the recorded instances have happened with people about to be executed on death row or facing death for battle or war or something like that. So what it looks like this condition is it looks like somebody who is really stressed out about something, and their body reacts to that stress by actually sweating blood. This could be what happened to Jesus. So even before the cross, he starts off with this mental pain and the physical process of blood loss. Then he's arrested. He's kept up all night. He gets shuffled from one political authority to another to figure out what to do with him. Finally, his fate is determined, and he's given a Roman flogging. This would be a beating administered using what's called a flagrum. A flagrum would have a long handle with several leather cords attached to it. At the end of those cords would be small metal pieces of shrapnel or little tiny barbells. The point is that when you're whipped with this instrument, those metal pieces would actually scrape alongside your back, shredding the flesh, leaving huge puncture marks in your skin. It looks like, at least from one of the Gospels, that Pilate had him flogged before deciding to crucify him, that he was going to just give him a beating, so he would have given him a standard beating, which was inches away from death. The typical person being crucified would be given a mild beating, because the point was that you would stay on the cross a long time and suffer for days up there. But Jesus was given a more significant beating than normal, and that might explain why he died much faster than the other criminals on the cross. Then, of course, he's given the crown of thorns. A thorny bush is woven into a crown, or probably actually a cap, and pressed into his skull. Dr. Zugibe mentions a medical condition called trigeminal neuralgia. It's essentially an inflammation of the very tender nerves that are on the scalp. What happens when these nerves are inflamed is that the patient suffers spasms of pain, shooting pain all around the face and the head area. Patients have described this as feeling like stabbing electric shocks, burning, pressing, crushing, exploding, or shooting pain that becomes intractable. It messes with all the nerves up there so that even a slight wind or just turning the head can send shivers of pain through your body. So Jesus has probably experienced hematidrosis, blood loss. He's been beaten nearly to death. Now he's got this trigeminal neuralgia, and he's not even on the cross yet. Then they walk him to Golgotha to crucify him. He stumbles and falls. He can't make it that far because he's been beaten so severely. And when he makes it there, soldiers probably knock him to the ground, hold him down, spread his arms, and then send nails through his palms, which one physician has described as the most painful place on the body to be punctured. He's probably nailed to a single crossbar, which is then lifted up and placed on a spike, a vertical spike in the ground, so that the cross he was on was probably more like a capital T than the lowercase t that we imagine the cross to be. Can you imagine, after all he's been to, being lifted by that bar and placed on a spike? Then his feet are nailed to the wood, and then he hangs there. Dr. Zugibe wanted to find out what exactly happened when you're crucified. So he did what a normal person would do. He hired a bunch of college students. Oh, that reminds me, we're having a special lunch after the service just for the college students, so make sure to be there, okay? It'll be great, I promise you. What Dr. Zugibe did, I'm just kidding, by the way. He hired a bunch of college students and he actually hung them on crosses. He fashioned special leather straps and he measured their vital statistics, probes and all sorts, the things attached to them while they hung there, to figure out what was going on. Now, these people didn't actually complain of not being able to breathe. That's why he concludes that patients wouldn't have died from suffocation. But they did complain of severe pain in their legs, severe pain in the shoulder area from the weight, and tightness in their chest. The conclusion that he makes, Dr. Zugibe, is that essentially the pain becomes too much for people on the cross, that after days of that, you simply die from the trauma and the accumulated pain of the crucifixion. He would list the cause of death for Jesus to be cardiac and respiratory arrest due to hypovolemic, that's blood loss, and traumatic shock due to crucifixion. You might summarize by saying that Jesus literally died of the pain. And that's crucifixion. So what do we do with all this? What conclusions do we make about ourselves? If this is what Jesus went through, how do we process this? How do we understand what it means to us? It's a difficult thing to figure out. But I think sometimes we have this picture of Jesus on the cross as if he's okay. As if, well, we know that Jesus is God, and so he might go through this stuff, but he's actually riding above it, that he's calm and peaceful. He's in control. He is God, after all. We sometimes think that Jesus didn't actually experience this pain. It's as if he put Yoda's philosophy in practice. He let go of all that pesky stuff like blood and hurt. He was fine. But that's not at all the biblical picture of what happened on the cross. Jesus actually suffered real pain. He was tortured. He probably vomited several times from the pain. He was dizzy. He was sweating. He was bleeding. He didn't ascend above the pain, but he also didn't avoid it. We're told in one gospel account that the soldiers offered him this mild anesthetic. It was wine mixed with gall or myrrh, and he refused it. He knew this was what the Father had for him, and he faced it. To be honest, it's hard to talk about this. It's hard to figure out, how do we even think about this? We're sitting here in our nice, comfortable auditorium with our padded pews, talking about what Jesus went through. I was struck several times as I was studying for this, I would take my book, The Crucifixion of Jesus, and read about all this horrible stuff while I had my mocha sitting next to me and my croissant with it, and think, something about this isn't right. But would it be better if I sat on a chair of nails? Some people in history have done that. They've purposely inflicted pain on themselves as a way of understanding and identifying with what Jesus went through. But that can't be what Jesus wants. It's not a matter of pain for pain's sake. And yet Jesus experienced this pain. So the first thing we can learn about this is that if Jesus suffered, if he felt this pain, then it's okay to suffer. We will face pain. We don't have to rise above it. We don't have to pretend like it doesn't bother us. We can suffer. It's okay to be in pain. It's okay to hate it. It's okay to cry aloud to God. Along with Jesus, we can suffer. I think most of us are really uncomfortable with the idea that Jesus actually suffered. Because if God let Jesus go through this, then what might he ask me to face? It may come as a surprise to you that sometimes I think of my life as if it's a movie. And of course, I'm the main character in this movie. It's mostly about me. Some of you play roles, but you know, it's mostly about me. When hard things happen, I think that's normal. You know, bullets fly all around and other people get hurt and maybe other people die, but I'm the main character. The main character doesn't die. I know I'll be fine because the story can't go on without me, right? Well, then I see Jesus on the cross. And I realize, first of all, maybe I'm not the main character. And second of all, even if I were, maybe the main character can die. Maybe the main character can suffer. What this means then is that I can face pain. I can suffer. I can be hurt. I can enter into it. I can be honest with it. I can yell at God about it. I can scream at the top of my lungs, "Where are you, God? Why would you let this happen to me?" There's nothing wrong with yelling at God. What's wrong is when you stop yelling at God, when you don't bother anymore, because you've concluded that he's not there. As I watch Jesus on the cross, I realize that I can and will suffer. And that means that I can let other people suffer too. That doesn't mean not intervening when I can stop suffering, but it means that when somebody tells me about something difficult they're going through, I don't have to try and talk them out of how hard it is. I don't have to say, "Well, yeah, but this other thing's going real well, right?" Or I don't have to remind them of some Bible verse that tells them that things are going to be okay anyway. I can sit with them in their suffering, knowing that there is real pain, and there are times in our lives where we will face real pain just as Jesus did. Sometimes it seems like feeling pain isn't mature. If we're really spiritual, if we're really following God, we should be above all that stuff. That's Yoda talking, not Jesus. This was actually one of the first early church heresies. See, there was a bunch of people right away that, just like you and I, said, it doesn't seem right that Jesus should suffer. So they decided that Jesus didn't suffer. They called his suffering apparent. That means it was pretend. He seemed like he was suffering, but he wasn't actually suffering. Their philosophy was called docetism, and it was really quickly recognized as heresy, false, dangerous. And yet it's alive and well today. And I think some of us believe it without thinking about it. We believe that Jesus didn't really suffer. It's not really real pain. And yet it is. And we will and can suffer the same type of real pain. Well, so far it's been a fun message, right? It's not the most encouraging message I've given. And if we ended here, we'd be in a mess. But we don't end here because Jesus doesn't end here. Because in the midst of Jesus' suffering, there's something else. There's something more. That's what we want to look at now. When people who believe in God go through pain, they face a double problem. First, there's the pain. They have to deal with that. Second, there's what the pain implies. What if God doesn't like me? What if God's forgotten about me? What if he's angry at me? Or the worst, what if he is not? What if there is no God? It's one of the most common reasons why people don't believe in God. They say it's easier to not believe in a God who would let hard things happen than it is to believe in a God who would let hard things happen. It's easier to think that there is no answer to the question that Jesus is asking than to think that there might be an answer that we can't quite grasp or we can't quite see. But Jesus doesn't go there. He asks a difficult question. He asks God, where are you in this? And we have to believe that he's actually asking this question. He's not an actor reading a script, trying to make it seem like he's really sad so that we're inspired by it. Jesus is actually asking why. He wants to know why God has left him there. And the question is there an answer? Well, Jesus asks why, but he does so in a way that insists there must be an answer. See, he doesn't just ask in any old words. He quotes the first verse of Psalm 22. Psalm 22, verse 1 reads, my God, why have you forsaken me? And as you read along in the psalm, what happens in the psalm is a story is told of a man who is in despair, who is wondering where God is, but who eventually finds an answer to that question. Listen to Psalm 22, verse 24. For he has not despised or disdained the suffering of the afflicted one. He has not hidden his face from him, but has listened to his cry for help. So Jesus is really asking why. He really wants to know why God has left him there. But he reads it out of this psalm as a way of saying, for this guy, he wanted to know why, and he eventually got an answer. And I trust that there must be an answer, God. I insist that you answer me just like you answered this guy long ago. Now, Jesus doesn't receive an answer right then, but there is an answer. And so for us, as we follow Jesus, as we enter into real pain, real suffering, we know there is something else there. Embedded in our questions of God is the belief that God is there. There's the belief that God will answer our question. And so when we suffer, we don't suffer like the rest of the world suffers. We suffer with hope. We suffer because we know there must be an answer, even if we can't see it, and even if that hope is dim and faint. Jesus had hope that there was an answer. So what's the answer? Why did God leave Jesus there? Why did Jesus willingly go there? Well, the first thing is it has to do with us. God was demonstrating his love for us by allowing Jesus to suffer. Jesus was demonstrating his love for us. See, if I walked up to you and I said, I love you, you'd say, whoa, that's nice. But what if you said, prove it? What could I do? How could I prove my love to you? Well, I could buy you something really nice. Or maybe I could come clean your house for you. That would prove my love. Or mow your lawn. Or, I don't know, I could do something you really want done. How can I prove my love to you? By doing something that costs me, but benefits you. That's the surest way to prove love, right? That I would go through suffering so that you would not have to. You hate cleaning your house. I'll clean it for you so you don't have to. That's love. Suffering for the sake of another. It's not how we normally think about love. What we normally think about love is, I love you. That means you make me feel really great. I like being around you. But that's not what God means when he says, I love you. We don't make God happy. God's willing to suffer so that we can be happy. So Jesus' suffering on the cross proclaims God's love for us. This is the length he's willing to go through for our sake. This is his demonstration of the power and depth of his love for us. But there's got to be more, right? I mean, just going through pain, if I said, well, I'm going to prove to you that I love you by hammering my finger really hard, you'd say, that doesn't show me anything. Pain in itself doesn't demonstrate love unless that pain benefits you. So what is it about the cross that benefits us? When Jesus died on the cross, he changed everything. He changed all the rules. What Matthew says when Jesus died is that the sky turned dark. The temple of the curtain was shattered. The ground shook. What Matthew says is that when Jesus died, something cataclysmic, it's a cool word, occurred. The world as we know it was changed forever. What happened is that Jesus took on suffering so that suffering itself might end. He experienced pain so that pain would be no more. Jesus didn't just succumb to death, he defeated death. The pain of Jesus introduced something new, so that the author of Revelation, the Apostle John, could say this in Revelation 21:4. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death, or mourning, or crying, or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. That's what Jesus' pain on the death did. Pain on the cross did. He took on pain so that pain itself would end, so that the old order would come to an end, so that something new would be there for us. So, the first thing we see is that Jesus suffered, but he suffered in hope because his suffering ended suffering for all time. That means when we suffer, when we enter into pain, we can do it because we know that that pain is just the last dying gasp of a defeated enemy. Pain itself is on its way out. Its story is about to end. When we experience it, we can do so because we know that it's going to be over. There's something on the other side of that for us who believe in Jesus. Pain will end, and on the other side will be life and joy and resurrection, life with the Father. That's why we have hope. Jesus' death on the cross proved his love for us, and it ended the pain that we will experience. So we suffer in hope. Yoda is wrong. If you're a Yoda fan, I'm sorry. I hate to be the one to break it to you. It might be better to say, wrong Yoda is, right? I actually had the grammar off in the first service, so some Star Wars fans corrected my wrong grammar to be Yoda correct, however that works. Death is not a natural part of life. We were never meant to die. We were never meant to experience pain. We don't rejoice when pain and death declare small victories. We do mourn. We do miss people. But we do so with hope. We don't have to ascend above it. We don't have to pretend like we're so spiritual, we're so mature that nothing bothers us. We don't have to fight against it and spend all of our energy trying to make sure that nothing hard will ever happen to us. We can face the pain that God brings in our lives, and we can do so because we know there's hope. We know there's something on the other side. Don't avoid your pain. Don't try to ascend above it. Go through it. Suffer for real. Cry out to God. Yell at him. Ask him the hard questions. But know that there is something there. And together, we'll find out what that is. We'll find out with Jesus what lies on the other side of this pain. And we'll see that resurrection, that life, and that joy. God, thank you that that we have hope, that there is something for us on the other side of pain. Help us to know that. Help us to find this balance of being honest with the hard things we feel, but knowing that there's something on the other side. God, this is hard stuff. We need your Spirit in us. We need each other to help us. We need you. Help us to suffer in hope, Father. And we pray this in the name of your Son, Jesus, who suffered for our sakes. Amen.